coming on all nations of the earth, but our focus is on the United States of America.
The haves are not giving as much to the have-nots these days. A new survey finds aid from the world's richest nations to the world's poorest countries has fallen to its lowest level since they started keeping track 47 years ago. You're listening to ABC News.
The following is a mathematical leverage example. It does not imply that clients have or will achieve similar results. Investors, listen close. The stock market is at an all-time high, but how much are you really making? Winners Group believes the situation exists with the potential of turning $5,000 into $20,000 over the next 6 months in heating oil. It won't be long until cold weather and higher winter demand is upon us. There are warnings about supply disruptions already. Get the facts yourself. 1-800-618-8009. 1-800-618-8009. Learn why heating oil prices are typically lower before winter demand increases. Of course, past performance is not indicative of future results, and people can and do lose money, but people also make money. Timing and strategy is the key. Find out how you could possibly make $20,000 on $5,000. Get the research reports, the charts and graphs on heating oil. There's no cost or obligation for the information. The time is now. 1-800-618-8009. That's 1-800-618-8009.
Just as merchants are stocking their shelves for the holiday shopping season comes reason for a case of the jitters. They could wind up short of products made in Japan if an ongoing dispute with that nation boils over.
What we're disputing is a long-standing problem in Japanese ports in which discriminatory practices have been employed against U.S. operators.
The head of the Federal Maritime Commission, Harold Creel, has asked the Coast Guard to bar Japanese cargo ships from U.S. ports if there's no major headway in settling this dispute by late Friday. That could hold up billions of dollars in products. It was a primer Congress got Thursday on how the South American drug cartels traffic their drugs in the U.S. ABC's Vic Ratner was on Capitol Hill taking notes.
In the drug business, like anything else, there are specialists. The former drug cartel leader called Mr. Rodriguez told the House panel, Dominicans handled the distribution, Colombians ran the operation, Peruvians supplied untraceable cell phones and beepers.
They sell one telephone for $300, and they throw in 1 month's service.
Through a translator, Rodriguez testified the illegal phones come with a guarantee. If the authorities track down and cut off the number, you get another number free. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
This is ABC News.
Are you an inventor, or do you know an inventor who would like a free inventor's kit? Call Invention Submission Corporation at 1-800-727-IDEA and learn how to get your free kit. You'll learn how to patent your idea and submit it to industry. Call 1-800-727-IDEA. That's 1-800-727-IDEA, IDEA. Even if you only have an idea for improving an existing product, call 1-800-727-IDEA. That's 1-800-727-IDEA, IDEA.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Bartender, can I have a glass of Chardonnay, please?
We have several Chardonnays, sir. Kendall Jackson, Behringer,
yeah.
Corbett Canyon, Mondavi.
Wait a minute, what was that last one?
The Mondavi?
No, the one before that, the one in the unusual bottle.
Oh, the kind of tall-shouldered bottle here?
Yeah, the bottle that's sort of square on the bottom and round
on the top. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a very nice, crisp Chardonnay, sir. You're going to like that. That's Corbett Canyon.
It sounds different.
Well, it is different. The winery's in the Central Coast region. And in fact, it's the Central Coast's most awarded winery.
No, I mean, it sounds different when you say it.
Well, I probably say it differently because it's one of my favorite Chardonnays, sir. Nice fruit, a lot of Chardonnay character. It's pretty full.
Well, okay, I'll try the Corbett Canyon.
Very well. Three glasses coming up.
No, wait.
Good taste echoes from the Canyon
Vineyards, San Luis Obispo and Ripon, California.
Thank you.
it still working?
Oh, yeah. Got it fixed. It won't hurt you this time.
That's good. As you know, we have an automatic pineapple deploying situation here at the diner. Whenever I start... It's a proximity sensor. Whenever I start to really pass out and my head gets a little too close to the counter, automatically a pineapple slides up and I brush my face against its prickly surface and I'm awake. It's been one of those weeks, friends. And that's why tomorrow I won't be here at the diner, unfortunately. Now, here's my impersonation of myself tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I have to go home tonight, write a speech for Almanac. I'll be on Almanac at 7 o'clock tomorrow. And I probably will not sleep between then and now, so take a look at me and notice the wonders that makeup can do with somebody who's got bags under his eyes, the size of drag chutes for Craig Breedlove cars. Anyway, here we are at the diner for the next 53 minutes or so until Art Bell comes rolling along. Canned art, but still good. And if you'd like to join us here, wait, because Jeremy has stepped away from the grill and can't answer your phone. The instant he returns, I'll give the phone numbers, and you can ring up the rotary nickel-plated phone at the end of the diner. Let's head straight to Eric King of Kinko's.
You know, James, that was a pretty good impression of Mel Blanc doing an impression of you going to sleep. That was not too bad.
Yeah, it's amazing the vector where absolute, total, thorough, complete, and utter exhaustion and caffeine intersect. Strange things happen. I mean, right now, if you prick me, I would actually bleed coffee. If you squoze my hand, you would see small little Colombian
really?
Fluids. Oh, man.
Hold on,
I'm just,
hold on.
No.
Oh.
Oh. I didn't mean it literally.
Oh, it's true, though. Look at your blood.
Yeah, I know. It's brown. I'm just a sea of coffee.
Mm.
But it's been necessary. You hit a certain point where you age out, as we learned, where coffee just doesn't work anymore, and it's an alarming point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. Actually, you go to those stronger and stronger brands until there are none left.
Well, I drink nothing but French roast right now.
Okay.
And I've got a coffee maker at the Star Trib on my desk, so I'm able to make it with a potency that I like, the stuff that makes Guinness look like Milwaukee, like old Milwaukee.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, real knife and fork coffee.
Hey, before I get to my topic, I was just going to mention a couple commercials back there. I was just wondering why the airport thinks that grown adults are going to take advice from a man stuck in perpetual puberty.
you're quite right. You know what it is? It's the same it's the same thought among advertisers that believes that we all regard the 1977-78 season of Saturday Night Live as the apex of human civilization vis-a-vis humor. Which is why you still have wild and crazy guys infecting ads. Why you still have bad Bill Murray impersonations infecting ads.
And why you still have at least 10% of the ads starting with live from.
Right, with the saxophone. That drives me nuts. I snarl when I hear that now because it's 22 years old.
It's getting as old as the top 10 list, yes.
Speaking of Bill Murray, you've seen perhaps an ad that, I can't remember which patron brought it up. It was the ad of Johnny Cash in the plant singing the Laverne and Shirley theme.
Okay.
You've seen the ad?
I have not seen the ad.
When you do, take a look and notice that Johnny Cash appears to have morphed into Bill Murray. He looks like Bill Murray. He's got his hair kind of the same greasy whorls. His face has the same sort of happily overfed bratwurst chubbiness to it. And he's got the same impish grin. He looks like somebody has collided Bill Murray and Johnny Cash into one human being.
That's scary, actually.
Anyway, you were talking about...
Well, the Jolly Green Giant. Yeah. Fell from heaven? Yes. Satan? No.
Oh, really?
No. I've been doing some reading here, mm-hmm. And actually I ran into Richard, came by a Kinko's.
Richard?
He said he called you. He says he knows you.
Are you talking about Rich, our old patron Rich? Who
Richard who called about Maria.
Richard guy that said
right, sorry.
In Washington. He says he met everybody. I mean, he says he met Sheryl Crow. I mean, he says he met everybody, and, you know, he's got all these wonderful stories, but he was making the copies for his little... thing.
Right, I remember Richard, sure.
He's doing something at the Target Center, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing all these copies for it. And but he had all these stories, and his take on the whole Green Giant thing, you remember in the 50s when they were talking about the little green men from Mars?
Yes.
No. He says they're the big green men.
The big green men.
Yeah. Yep. He says it's all tied into the old Area 52 scandal. He's big on that, too, by the way.
Well, good. I want as many people as possible to realize the threat that that Area 52 poses to our nutritional intake. It would make sense, too, Mars being having a lesser gravitational pull, the creatures would evolve of much greater height.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
The face on Mars? Mm-hmm. Sidonia?
Yeah, which is the Pillsbury Doughboy face.
Well, now, if you take a look, mm-hmm. though,
mm-hmm. big green men from Mars.
The face of the Pillsbury Doughboy to the face of Sprout.
You know, you could be onto something there.
Mm-hmm. Advertising.
You could be onto something. I tell you, when I go home, I'm going to run this through some filters and just do some cross-checking and see whether or not the erosion patterns that they predicted when they ran when they did the face on Mars, as everybody knows, has been now scientifically subjected to analysis. And if you run it backwards in time, before it eroded, it looked like, I thought, the Pillsbury Doughboy. Mm-hmm. But you're quite right. Sprout has the same sort of round,
it
doughy...
It may not be a chef hat on the top of his head. It may be leaves.
Yeah, or some sort of telecommunication apparatus that they wore in that civilization.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
The face of Sprout on Mars. The fact that the planet is now red is just, it's a ruse, because back then it was probably covered with huge, immense fronds, big, huge leaves.
It's very possible.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Eric, I think we're getting closer and closer to this, and I thank you, as ever, for your contribution.
All right.
All right, good night, buddy.
Okay.
I think he's got it. I think he's onto something. I still like him... Jolly Green Giant being from hell.
Well, your theory may be just as valid. Who is to say that Richard is right about everything?
Mm-hmm.
He could be wrong.
That's true. That's true.
Maybe Satan's from Mars.
Explain a lot. Rob from Maplewood, how you doing tonight?
Not too bad.
That's good.
Well, I don't know. This could be, as far as a business-wise anyways, I've got a bit of the origin of how he came to be used as a sales symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It was a guy from the Minnesota Valley Growers Company that back in, it was like late 20s, traveled to Europe and came across this pea that was called the Prince of Wales.
The pea was called the Prince of Wales?
This variety of pea.
Oh, okay.
And it was larger and somewhat, I guess, wrinkled looking compared to the early June peas that all the growers around here were using that at the time.
Didn't have an interest in architecture, did it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I guess it tasted a heck of a lot better than the early Junes, but they couldn't convince the growers because it looked like it would be tougher to eat,
mm-hmm.
no tougher peat. Well, so they decided to market it themselves, and the guy that later came up with the Marlboro Man came up with this Green Giant concept.
Really?
Yep.
Well, there was a long time between the Jolly Green Giant and the Marlboro Man.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe it was just the same firm or something.
Yeah, that strikes me as right, probably.
But yeah, well, anyway, I guess, like somebody said, it was like a shorter and rounder type of thing. And they did start out with the ho-ho-ho thing, mm-hmm. trying, you know, making them, you know, and they end up with the Jolly Green Giant.
And like the Prince of Wales, he wears a skirt.
Yeah.
Frequently we saw Bonnie Prince Charles himself wearing the plaid of his
house. Yeah, I don't want to compare. I mean, I wear a kilt myself at times, so I don't want to compare it to the
A lot of us around the house wear kilts, or for that matter, just slip. You know, because I don't have a kilt around, or you don't have a kilt around, we slip into a nice little silky outfit that the wife may happen to have.
Yeah, I stick with the kilt. Yeah.
Hey, when I was a Roman governor, mm-hmm. I wore a kilt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but anyway, maybe they ended up changing. I mean, because, you know, they had the shorter, rounder giant. Well, maybe this Green Giant, this Hellspawn guy, you know, he got wind of this and said, hey, here's a way to improve my public image.
Hmm.
And maybe behind the scenes, because around 1950, they actually did change the name to the Green Giant Company.
Wait a minute. Perhaps then, at some point, the Green Giant asked the demon to come in. It's possible that the Jolly Green Giant is perfectly possessed, as Father Malachi Martin would say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he got so buff. That's why he got so big. That's why he got so successful.
Well, there we go, yeah. And then he ended up taking over the company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got this nice, jolly public image, but, you know, like you said, who knows what goes on behind closed doors.
I wouldn't want to be present at that exorcism.
No.
You want to talk pea green soup. No, thank you. Well, Rob, thank you for helping us add once again to the lore. By the end of the evening, we will get to the bottom of this devilish mystery.
I think we're going to have to send this to Art when he gets back from vacation. I think this bears further investigation.
Art hears all. Art knows all. Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. And now, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, how you doing?
Okay. I'm actually Heidi's husband,
yes.
Who earlier snuck off.
Slave driver.
That's right. I thought, you know, she just left the room, and all of a sudden, next thing I know, I'm hearing her on the radio. So why is this scraping taking so long?
Are you using Zip Strip by any chance?
We have used absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Short of dynamite.
When I used the Zip Strip on my stairs, it turned blood red as though there had been some murder on the stairs, and it was now crying out for vengeance.
Yeah, it's doing a job on the brass, I think. It starts to turn it all green and everything.
Yeah, you.
But I had a couple thoughts. I am in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an art director.
Oh, really? For what local firm?
For Carmichael Lynch.
Wow. What are some of the spots you've shepherded?
Well, as of right now, we're doing mostly print.
Mm-hmm.
The higher ups get to do more of the TV. But I had a little theory on where Sprout came from, because everybody seems to think that he's human.
Right.
Where the green color, would show more chlorophyll. So I think he's actually more of a plant, something like a kudzu or something.
More fibrous. Yeah.
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 So he probably, at some point in his life, lost a finger in a combine, which turned into budding. So I think it's kind of an asexual reproduction.
Well, he doesn't exactly exhibit secondary sex characteristics.
No.
There's no little clumps of spurge beneath his armpits.
You're not seeing any unsightly bulges or anything.
No, and I'd hate to hear his voice
any
crack.
Root growth.
No, not at all. You may be right. I actually have another theory, which I'll impart in a few seconds here.
Okay.
But that's good, and that gets me thinking. However, I'm keen to know, what print ads might you have done that I've seen? Come on, man, toot your horn.
Working on Schwinn.
Okay.
Schwinn bikes.
Well, that's a classic account.
Which is fun, actually, a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a company that's kind of, they've been down and then, or they were up and down, and now they're starting to come back up, so that's kind
of
cool.
And a lot of brand equity there, too.
So if you see an ad in the paper of a giant nose, that's actually my nose. I was a nose model for a day. So that's my small claim to fame.
That's great. Anything else?
Let's see. I don't know. I've...
Because I'm a student of advertising, an absolute amateur, but I'm always fascinated by it and pay great attention to ads and what they're trying to do.
Oh, do you?
I especially love when companies take out 12-page inserts in the Wall Street Journal, such as IBM has done with their e-business thing. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen the e-stuff.
I give it a look. It's very interesting. It tells you everything about e-business except sort of what it is.
Well, there's so much of advertising that just says nothing.
Yeah.
Just, they take out 12 pages because they have a lot of money to burn.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Marlboro, what was mentioned earlier, where it's just cowboys and trying to set up the tone.
Right.
But it was interesting. That was actually targeted originally at women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Originally, it was a women's cigarette.
Yeah,
the cork tip was supposed to hide the lipstick.
Yeah.
And then it was repositioned, so as they say in the business.
Repositioned at one point.
Yeah.
But I think on our side of the business, I think you just try to have a lot of fun. I think people try to make things into something they're not.
Well, if I'm ever ground out of existence in the newspaper world, should somebody take over the Star Tribune and downsize me to a mere pudding on the floor, I'll come crawling to you guys for any sort of job I can get.
Oh, definitely some voiceover work.
Yeah, I may. All right, Glenn, thanks a lot. Have fun with the house, and give us a call again and tell us how it's going.
Okay, thanks.
All right, talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And now it's EJ the Pizza Man. How you doing, EJ?
Good, how about you tonight?
I'm just fine. I have to say, I had a pizza tonight, and while I had it, the great taste of your pizza still lingered in the back of my mind.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I thought I'd give you some insight on that Jolly Green Giant there, the whole thing.
Yes.
It's actually a subliminal message.
You're saying what?
It's a subliminal message.
But what's the message?
I'm not sure, but I heard that it's give all your money to the government.
Well, it seems to have worked then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it?
Except if it's subliminal and it encourages us to give our money to the government, why do they need an IRS? Why do they need a collection apparatus? Why aren't we just willingly showing up with buckets of guilt every day and pouring it into their coffers?
Well, you know, the earplugs that you wear every now and then when you go to, hot rod events and things like that?
Right.
Well, that's what happens. You get those earplugs in there, and it stops the subliminal message from coming through.
You're right. At no place where noisy internal combustion engines have been operating have I felt an overwhelming need to give the contents of my pockets to the government.
That's right.
You're onto something here.
That's right.
Maybe a little cotton in the ear is what we ought to hand out come April 14th.
That's a good idea.
That's a thought. All right. Thanks, EJ.
Have a good night.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And now, I can't believe it. My heart is filled with blood. Happiness is here at the diner. The lights, even though they're the same character they always are seem a little brighter. The coffee...
The grill is hotter.
The grill is hotter.
The silverware shines.
Mm-hmm. The boomerang patterns themselves seem to vibrate in happy expectation of the triumphant return of our faithful patron, Rich. Where the hell have you been?
Well, I've been working a potpourri schedule, which has precluded my regular attendance.
Well, welcome back, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, well, somebody rolled back the rock, so I have risen.
good to hear from you. We were starting to get a little worried.
Well, not to worry. I'm a survivor.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. No, we were worried about the people who would try to do something to you. That's what I mean.
Well, that's their problem, not mine.
So where are you now? Are you at your accustomed place? You sound almost...
No, old. I'm actually out on my cell phone in the car en route home from an earlier watch, one that terminated earlier than my normal hours.
Ah, good.
Going back to Jolly Green Giant, long-range flashback to the misspent days of my youth, there was an early science fiction movie called The Thing from Outer Space, which turned out to be vegetable matter.
So if the thing from outer space wrapped around the amazing colossal man, you'd get the Jolly Green Giant.
Well, I'm just wondering if the dynamo at the end of the movie where they ostensibly electrocuted said vegetable from outer space was unsuccessful.
That's quite possibly the case. That's why he's laughing.
And now we are looking at progeny. The premise of this movie back in the 50s, I think at the time I first saw it, I was junior high school, which may have been 53, that's when we had 16 frames a second and everything was very jerky.
Uh-huh.
You know, hand crank projectors were not very good. Anyway, a flying saucer crashed in the Arctic and they went and dug out this great block of ice.
Wasn't that the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
The thing from outer space, the thing. And anyway, they started dissecting it, and they discovered there were seed pods in the palm, and the next thing it was doing was wrecking havoc in this Arctic environment. And, of course, it was having no problem. Obviously, this was a frost-hardy plant.
Yes, and it looked like a big carrot.
Yeah, only it had appendages, you know.
Yeah, but who played that beast?
That I would not have any idea. At that time, I was not interested in who was playing in what movie. I was simply interested in whom I was playing with at the movie.
That's why you call it The Thing from Outer Space. You know? Exactly.
But anyway, as I remember, they finally decided to electrocute this thing. That was the only way they could assassinate it, because it was going through all sorts of self-healing and so forth with wounds which normally would have caused a loss of body fluids. It was closing these up, you know, and the ability of vegetable matter to seal itself. But I'm wondering if there is now, we are now not looking as we go down 169 at some sort of subtle reproduction. This may be something for art. This may be something that came out of Area 51 somewhere near Dreamland.
Area 52. No, yeah. It's food-based. If it's food-based, it came out of Area 52.
I see. Somewhere near Dreamland or Nightmare Land or whatever.
I think we should send a transcript of this or a tape to Art and just let him know that he's been trumped, he's been leapfrogged, that his subject material is passé, it's old, man. We're on to something completely way leagues beyond you.
Yeah, it's from up here somewhere near the Arctic Circle.
Right, yeah. North to the pole, south to the pole, east, west to the pole, frankly, because here we are.
Yeah, there's nothing between here and the North Pole but 18 strands of barbed wire anyway.
That's right, and some guys in planes waiting to drop the bomb should the Ruskies ever get any other ideas.
Right.
Well, Rich, it's great to hear from you again, and drop by again as ever. There's always a stool and a hot cup of coffee.
Well, I will visit when I get an opportunity. My schedule having been precluding my visits, why?
Good.
I've been somewhat, you know, in withdrawal.
Well, good. There's been some people snooping around the diner, frankly, that I might need your help with.
Well, Jeremy and I can take care of that. That's not a problem.
We'll preach again, Brother Rich.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon, Rich.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
You too, sir. Bye. Good to hear from him. Yeah, there have been some guys out front with sticks. That's all I'll say, just with sticks. They worry me. Roger from Coon Rapids, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I'm not going to ask you because I'm sure you've answered that question about 20 times already tonight.
Which, well, actually, it varies depending on when you ask me.
Okay. All right, then how are you?
Right now, I'm really, really starting to hallucinate, frankly. Peripheral vision is going. My head appears to be moving slightly side to side at an accelerating rate. Other than that, I'm tired, but happy. Oh, thank you. That broke me out of it.
Well, good. I hope I can contribute.
Yes, we'll do your best, sir.
Okay. I was thinking that there's this Area 52 thing probably has something to it, some sort of experiment run amok.
Yeah.
But you recall, I think there was some sort of deal with arms for drugs for radioactive vegetables.
Oh, right.
And do you remember that Gilligan's Island episode?
I wasn't aware it was a Gilligan's Island episode.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was a scandal back in the 80s.
No. This was before that. This was back in the 60s. This is some sort of a drug-running thing. I think there was an airplane flight that was destined for the Golden Triangle across the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And the plane was shot down by the Soviets, and there was a big box of radioactive vegetables.
On Gilligan's Island.
Yes.
Well, then, why didn't they all just die of horrible, massive, suppurating growths?
Well, everyone did. Well, Gilligan ate the carrot. You know, they grew the carrot seeds, and Gilligan ate the carrots, and... No, he ate the spinach, I'm sorry. He ate the spinach, and he got really strong.
Uh-huh.
And Mrs. Howell ate the sugar beet, and she got really hyper.
What was Marianne's secret power?
I don't recall.
Oh,
didn't she have sight?
I would have remembered that
one.
She
was the carrot, then. She was the carrot.
Okay.
Yeah. She could see really well.
She could see to the little... barely post-adolescent children watching her on the other end and
right,
knew
yeah.
what nasty human little thoughts
like
they were
having. Those x-ray glasses on.
Right, the ones in the comic books that made that you could see through skirts and see bones and things.
Yeah, so I think it was some residual effects of the growth that they had there on Gilligan's Island that would account for the whole Green Giant mystery.
Well, that could possibly explain then why the people in Gilligan's Island were there. It wasn't that they were just going for a cruise and happened to get lost. They were fleeing in their further fear of their lives from the forces that were pursuing them from Area 52.
Either that or
mm-hmm.
that it was a secret government installation there itself.
That's true. You know, if we find out that, Jonas Grumby used to be head of Area 52, I'm going to start to worry.
There you go. And
we were
just intercepting monitor signals.
Yeah, yeah. Although, an intersection between Area 52 and anything by Sheldon... who
Sherwood Schwartz.
Sherwood Schwartz, that's right, is the last thing I want to posit. I'm shuddering. All right, Roger, I got to go to a break. Thanks,
bye.
Buddy. Bye-bye. I'll say this before I go, and it'll come back. The Jolly Green Giant, Sprout, you know where Sprout came from? An unnatural, hellish union between the Jolly Green Giant and the only woman big enough to tame that green heart of his, the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. I know, it hurts to think of it, doesn't it?
Oh, the horror.
Or creaking.
Oh, the horror. Lady Liberty violated.
Creaking up. Well, I know, I'm sure it was consensual. You've been standing in one place holding a book with a lamp up for 80 years or something, you know.
True, but to think that she, the symbol of our liberty, would bring herself so low as to fornicate with fauna.
Who's to say
Flora?
That she didn't do it on her terms? You know, this may have been a very empowering thing.
She does have that torch.
Oh. And she's been carrying it for a long time. Maybe that's what that's all about. It's not liberty. It's not lighting a lamp for the immigrants. She's carrying a torch for the only man she ever loved. Son of a vegetable. James Lilacs here at the diner on KSDP. Sarah, is this our Sarah?
Yes, it is.
Everyone's coming back. On KSDP, AM 1500.
Parents, you know the importance of buckling your children up when traveling. The best choice for 4 to 8-year-olds is a federally approved car booster seat, which makes a safety belt fit them better, giving them better protection from injury in the event of a crash. The Minnesota Safety Council, Precision Tune, and KSTP AM 1500 are sponsoring a year-long campaign to raise awareness for these booster seats. For free information, stop by your local Precision Tune Auto Care Center. Call the Minnesota Safety Council or call us here at AM 1500 KSTP.
You're the one who brought the brush that painted the mural, that cheered up the kid who'd been into trouble for all sorts of schemes, who talked to a friend, who told of a class, which gave her ideas for starting a business, which she took to the bank, which gave her a chance, which slowly paid off and led her to hope. You're the one who can make the peace.
Sponsored by the Chemical Abuse and Violence Prevention Council, the Minnesota State Lottery, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, and others.
Minor Ford is proud to be affiliated with Eclipse Conversions, the conversion van company voted best in class. In a Ford survey, 9 out of 10 owners said they'd definitely buy another Eclipse van. Eclipse is so dedicated to excellence that regional sales manager Keith Smith even gives customers his home phone number.
Any Eclipse dealer you can be well assured of is the highest in integrity. And that's why we looked to Minor Ford when two people came on board. And we started hearing some of the commercials about Miner's idea of customer satisfaction and everything else. We said to ourselves, hey, this is a dealership that's got our same philosophy of business. And we decided, hey, I'm going to go over and I'm going to see these guys. I'm going to sit down with them because their philosophy is exactly what we're talking about.
Like General Manager Bob Lewis says,
we want to be the best Ford dealership. We don't want to be the biggest. We want to be the best.
The difference is the minor details. Minor Ford, 694 and Silver Lake Road, New Brighton.
Hi, this is Joe Souchere inviting you to please join us Monday at 2 p.m. when my guest will be David Gelertner, the author of Surviving Life. It's a slim little 155-page book of Gelertner's life after he was blown up by the Unabomber. You won't want to miss this. David Gelertner, a Yale computer science professor, survived the Unabomber and has written about it. Join us Monday on the talk station, KSTP AM 1500.
Inscrutable commentary to what Jeremy and I were discussing during the break. I should have slept during that break, shouldn't I? I should have just...
You should have, yeah. Should have caught some kids.
Put my head right down on the pie pillow that Mrs. Winthrop made for me and gone to sleep. But no, I'm pressing on. Sarah, it's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
What happened? Did something miraculous and wonderful happen?
No.
Oh.
No.
Well, where you been then? Did something we did?
No. No, I've been at school.
Yeah.
And it made me have this urge to sleep.
I understand the urge to sleep. Trust me.
What you need is some double or triple brewed coffee.
I'm on the quintuple brewed coffee right now.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. That coffee should be as black as a black hole.
You know those little individual serving packets you can get of coffee, or just, you know, it's got its own filter and you pour the water through.
Those huge wastes of money.
Yeah, those huge wastes of money. I got one of those between the cheek and the gum at all times. So, and I put my quintuple brewed coffee through that little pouch that I've got there.
Please
so
spit in the spittoon.
It's
too.
Actually, well, no, it's starting to burn a hole through it.
Dollar says that if you don't stop that soon, your urine will turn black.
Soon?
Yours.
Yeah, yeah, well, like I say, tomorrow I'm looking forward to an uninterrupted, contiguous block of at least 6 hours of sleep.
Oh, it won't happen.
Yeah, no. No, it won't. Nope, not going to happen.
Yes, there'll be someone that has the urge to mow their lawn.
Probably so, at about 3 o'clock in the morning or so.
No, I was thinking more along the lines of one.
Yeah. Well, I have to get up early in the morning because Saturday is the big wake day where I'll be making my debut as a pianist in front of a bunch of people, accompanying my lovely wife, who will be singing a hymn while I accompany her with a series of breathy synthesizer patches. So that will be fun. Luckily, I've arranged the thing so that even if I'm asleep, no one will be able to tell. I'm using a keyboard sound that is very slow attack. So if I hit the beat late, it no one will notice because it's a very slow building sound.
Well, you just set memory. You play it earlier and then you just set memory. You press the button and fall asleep.
I was tempted to do that, but then she can't really attenuate the last few bars. She can't just draw them out because the metronome would kill her. Believe me, Sarah, I thought of that. Why? I could just trigger the button by falling asleep on the keyboard, and it would play. And then at the end, she'd sort of pull my head up like Salome, you know, showing the pit. They had a
make her do it a cappella.
That's a thought too.
Yes, and you know, coffee does stunt your growth. Sir.
Well, that damage has been done.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to a spurt to bring me up to a towering 5'5".
A 2-foot growth. expert.
Yeah, well, it would probably be in the wrong direction. I'd become broader. I'd still be the same weight, the same, you know, I'd just be 2 feet broader, and the wind would come, and I'd end up in Kansas. I found out today that Beethoven was 5'4", which really makes me happy. John Keats, Napoleon, and Beethoven are all as tall as I am.
Yeah,
this is
that woman off the X-Files.
Gillian Anderson?
Yeah, she's only like 3'9".
Well, that's all done with camera angles.
I didn't know she was pocket-sized, but that's good to know as well. Well, good. Well, you sound tired, though. You want to go to sleep.
No. It's one of my awake nights. Thank God for the MEA convention.
Oh, that's right. Temporary suspension from the process of learning. Good to know.
Yeah, I know. It's really great. I've actually learned more on this day off than I have in the past 6 weeks.
What did you learn? Aside from everything about the Jolly Green Giant.
Basically that it's not nice to chase down people who flick you off.
No, you might find a little red laser sight playing around the interior of your vehicle.
And it's just not right.
Well, what happened?
Well, someone was just being really rude. It was someone I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut me off. And they flicked me off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just chased them down to the gas station.
And
just basically smothered their seat in the window wiper stuff.
You mean you poured a bottle of windshield wiper?
No. I took the squeegee.
Huh?
And while he was inside paying, I just...
You squeegeed his seat?
Yeah.
That's very devious.
It is. It's not very destructive. I mean, it was like vinyl.
It was cleaner afterwards.
Yeah.
And it evaporated quickly. He probably thanked you. He probably flicked you off for not doing the back seat as well. Well, what a day.
Yep.
Yes, you learn things about complex human, social, automotive interactions.
And I'll probably use that more in life than the square root of 5,286 million.
No, you'd be surprised. You'll be required at some point to fake your way through a rudimentary knowledge of mathematics. It helps to know when to nod sagely, when to laugh amusedly, and all that. When to cock an eyebrow over the insouciance of a particular theorem. It helps to know the language, so it's easier to fake.
Whenever someone starts talking about that, I just change the subject.
Well, when you're working for NASA and they're counting down the spacecraft, you're not going to be able to change the subject, young lady.
Oh, yes, I will.
And that'll be the gas probe that goes spiraling off into the sun.
No.
Hey, yes.
No.
Well, thank you for dropping by. We were starting to worry, and now we're worried, but for the usual reasons.
Okay.
All right. Have a good night, Sarah.
Oh, I will.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Chris on the car phone. How you doing, Chris?
Not too bad. I was on the phone waiting. I was on hold. My phone died out on me.
Oh.
I have two things I just wanted to give you guys. I was on the road, and I heard you were talking about, you know, you're falling asleep.
Uh-huh.
You know, I came up with this wonderful discovery today myself. I was ready to fall asleep at work. Well, on my way to work, I stopped and got some of those. I've never tried it before. You know that no-dose?
Yeah, I'm scared of those. Well, it has the caffeine of 2 cups of coffee, and, you know, I can put that away in 5 seconds.
Yeah, I know, but I drink like 2 bottles of Surge a day. Just to
okay.
Because I'm a crane operator.
Okay.
And I decided to say, well, let me fuel inject it with some Surge. And I tell you what, I was so awake, I was buzzing.
Oh, man.
But the thing about it is that you got to take it with, you know, that prescribed.
Uh-huh.
You got to fuel inject it with that Surge, or else you're going to come down hard. I came down real hard after that.
Oh, I can imagine.
I was just literally vibrating. I was coming down so hard.
You didn't. The crane didn't come down.
Huh?
Just you came.
My crane is running on a track, so I don't have to worry about it.
Okay, good.
But another thing, you guys were talking about the Gilligan's Island thing about the vegetables. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, you know, what happens if they? Well, the vegetables were huge, also when they grew them. You know,
right.
Well, what happens if they grew like cabbage? When, you know, like they pass gas, would they like kill everybody in the place?
I hadn't thought of that, but you're probably quite right. That's probably why they remained unsaved for seven or 8 years.
You know, or even like the beans, you know, like the beans were like the size of, you know, an orange or something, you know.
Well, they would put them on the map, and no longer they make them uncharted if actual toxic, huge, choking clouds of nuclear flatulence were wafting from the island.
They'd have to put quarantine buoys around the whole island, you know, just to keep everybody away.
In my mind, Gilligan's Island does have quarantine buoys around it, except for one little launch craft that goes and gets Marianne and Ginger, if she's behaving.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks much.
Well, thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. And now, Scott calling from a car phone. How are you doing tonight, Scott?
Hey, how are you, Jimmy?
Barely hanging in by the ends of my torn fingernails, but otherwise cheerful and happy to be here.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm pretty cheerful right now myself.
Good.
But, your show is called, was it James Diner?
No, it's just the Diner. Diner's where I hang out.
Well, I was with a buddy at a bar tonight, and we started talking about what we call Greasy Spoons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great little restaurant where you can go get a very nice meal for very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, where's your favorite Greasy Spoon?
Oh, man.
Be careful how you answer this one, James. Be very careful.
Besides the diner, you mean?
Exactly.
Actually, it closed.
It closed?
Yeah, it did. I haven't been able to get out in the restaurant world very often. I take my lunch to work, and and the rest of it, I don't want to demean the memory of the place by calling it a Greasy Spoon, but it had great hamburgers.
Not demeaning.
As long as people understand what we're talking about, it's a term of affection. It was the Cedar Street Cafe in St. Paul, where when I worked at the Pioneer Press, we'd go across the street for hamburgers. Great hamburgers, great people who worked there. Nice little counter with stools and good coffee and, healthy food too, but that was the kind of place that had that in mind. Great soups, stuff like that.
Sure. Well, healthy food's really not high on the list when you go to a Greasy Spoon.
No, sir. No, it's not.
is there anything that's still open that, you might be considered your favorite Greasy Spoon besides the diner right now?
No, to tell you the truth, I can't think about it because all the places that I loved are gone, and I haven't added enough to see, it's because I come here every night that I have the opportunity to go elsewhere. It would be faithless of me to go elsewhere. This is the perfect place to go at the end of the night.
I agree.
All right. Well, thanks, Scott.
You have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good answer. Very good answer.
I saw a couple of things today, one very alarming, and the other actually made me stop in my tracks, and I got chills. The first one goes back to something that a patron noted a while ago. The campaign for Cheese Whiz. It's whiz time, right? Whiz time.
I've seen the commercials now.
Proof, perhaps, that somebody isn't vetting this through the vernacular filter. I saw a billboard for whiz time, where you're watching the television. The view, let's put it this way. On the left side of the billboard is a leg and a foot. On the right side of the billboard is a leg and a foot. The view is right in the center of the leg and a foot. And from that perspective, the words whiz time, you put it together. The second thing I saw that absolutely stunned me today, I've been walking around downtown Minneapolis 2 decades, and I love it down there, and I know it, and every once in a while I find little surprises that add to the local lore. Maybe you've heard me talk over the last 2-3 weeks or so about the Minnesota Theater, the Radio City Theater, the big, huge, grand palace that was in downtown Minneapolis. Remember, Jeremy, we discussed this.
Yeah, that had we thought it would be a great place to go.
It had a staff of 300 people. It had one guy who just changed the light bulbs. It had an immense entranceway with huge faux marble columns, just a grand palace. Went bankrupt about 18 times. But it was the grandest theater downtown, the Minnesota, and then it was the Radio City. It was knocked down. On the spot, you can now find the LaSalle parking ramp, which is just a god-awful, dreadful 60s-70s building, on top of which they are building a hotel, a 4-story Embassy Suites hotel, go figure. And next to it is Lakewood Publishing, which used to be the CCO studios. Well, as I'm looking up at the Lakewood building today, just sort of trying to imagine what it was like when there was this huge terracotta facade and this great maroon gold sign that arched into the sky and said Minnesota and this big, huge marquee that wrapped around the corner. Just trying to imagine what it was like on a summer's evening when the throngs went around the block of people going in to see Tex Beneke and Glenn Miller's orchestra and all sorts of entertainment during fall happiness season for just a buck. And as I looked through one of the windows, and I realized that the skin of the building, the Lakewood Publishing building, is just that. It's just a skin over the old shell of the Minnesota Theater. I looked and I looked and I looked, and I could tell that they designed it so that you see the window that used to go into the lobby. You can actually see the little tiny architectural details. So it's there. It's there behind this. It's like it's imprisoned somehow. It's locked away. There are a lot of buildings like that downtown. brand new modern facades, and if you hack them off, you find the old city underneath. But the fact that there's still the facade, or parts of it, of that grand theater down there, makes me want to get some pickaxes and dynamite. No, I wouldn't. That would be wrong. But I really am fascinated now to peer behind and see exactly what I can see, because it's still there. The interior, of course, is completely gone. Anyway, my own particular obsession.
Let's rip the skin off, man.
No. It's not an onion. It's private property. Michael from St. Paul, how you doing? Hello, Michael.
Yes.
Yes, Michael.
Hi, James. I have two prongs in my thrust.
Thrust away, sir.
First of all, Al's Breakfast in Dinkytown. Do you have memories of that?
Al's Breakfast, yes. Oh, Lord, I had a book at Al's Breakfast for a while. I mean, the little booklet of where you prepay for your breakfast.
Still there. The coupons under the counter.
Yeah. And it was a hallowed day for me. I really felt like a denizen of Dinkytown when I actually had one of those things waiting for me. Oh, it was a great place. Genial abuse from the staff. The best pancakes in town. Great.
Oh, absolutely.
Huevos rancheros like you never had. Oh. Plus, you got the thrill of eating while somebody was standing right behind you.
Exactly.
Right behind you.
If you're overweight, you can't eat there.
No, because there's no place for you to go.
Sorry.
Try reading a newspaper when you're standing against the wall. There's less space between you and the guy at the counter than there is between Oscar Wilde and the person he got sent to jail for having fun with. It's close quarters.
Yeah, you kind of have to crack the paper open like New York or Washington.
Like I was describing the other night. That's what it's like. It's a little bit of that in old Dinkytown. You're right. That's a great place.
Okay. My other thought is Mark Russell apparently is sometimes funny. Now, Mishki does a thing where Mark Russell does National Brotherhood Week. It's a song.
That's not Mark Russell.
Oh.
That's Tom Lehrer.
Okay.
And as I've said before on many occasions, Mark Russell is the anti-Lehrer.
Okay. Well, I stand corrected.
That's
okay.
Okay. That's it. That's it, Mike?
Yep.
All right. Thanks for dropping by. Bye-bye. No, it's not Mark Russell. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at the guy who's been sitting in the back counter all night.
He went to the bathroom before during one of the commercial breaks.
Uh-huh.
He was asking about you, like he didn't know that was you.
The guy in the tuxedo?
Yeah, he came up and said, "When is James going to be here?" I said, "He'll be back soon." And maybe he thought you'd left, but he's not terribly bright.
I don't care who he is. Lance, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm concerned, though.
Well, what's the problem?
Well, you know, I mean, I listen every night,
mm-hmm.
call in, try to be part of the program, and all of a sudden, nobody's a faithful patron anymore.
No, no.
No, and then a couple calls ago, you got a guy call you Jimmy.
Yes, I did. I let that slip. That's how exhausted I am.
You must be. It's not the first time in the last couple of days that somebody hasn't called you by your real name, you know?
Yeah. Are you really James Lilax or a clever impersonator?
Hey. Come on now.
Take the blood screening.
Oh, all right. Do we have to do it where you put it, then you have the hot little rod?
Yes, we do.
And if it leaps across the room, it's me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hold on. Let me go get the blood kit.
Oh, I hate this. Get out the blowtorch.
Wait. Let me get the camera out of the trunk here.
Okay, I'm getting out a fork here. Hold on. Let me just... I mean, I'm tired, Lance. That's why I'm letting people call me Jimmy. I just... Ouch! Okay.
I don't even call you Jimmy.
I'm putting it on the saucer here. Well, it flew past, and he was on to something before I could correct him. All right, here's the blood. Go ahead.
Swish it around.
Wait, let me get the camera focused.
It's you.
Okay, you happy now?
All right.
I gotta go to a break.
All right.
Thank you, faithful patron Lance.
See ya, buddy.
Bye-bye. Everybody's a faithful patron. Of course, some patrons are more faithful than others. I said another... sorry, back! I am... No, we have to go. James Lilax here at the diner on KSDP AM 1500.
Hi, I'm Frank Buckley for Buckley's Mixture, and I came by my bad taste honestly. It was an inheritance from my father. You see, back in 1919, my father created a cough remedy called Buckley's Mixture. And all he cared about back then was whether his Buckley's cough mixture worked. He didn't particularly care how it tasted. And believe me, it shows. Buckley's mixture contains oil of pine needles, menthol, Canada balsam, and other such things that won't do a heck of a lot for your taste buds. But today, the large-sized bottle of Buckley's mixture is the best-selling cough remedy in Canada. So if you have a nasty cough due to a cold or minor bronchial irritation, you should give Buckley's mixture a try. Just pucker up and remember what Dad always said about Buckley's mixture. It tastes awful, and it works. Thanks.
Use only as directed.
Get Buckley's Mixture at Lloyd's Pharmacy, Modry Apothecary, Arden Pharmacy, Birch Pharmacy, and Walgreens.
I love eggs from my head down to my legs. I love eggs. Scramble and fry, whip them up in no time. I love eggs. I love eggs.
Recently, there's been a lot of news about eggs. People have rediscovered them, and it's easy to see why. Healthy people can enjoy eggs, along with a low-fat, well-balanced diet. Ask your doctor.
Ooh, you gotta love it, the incredible edible egg. I love eggs.
Rush Limbaugh.
Liberals love the IRS. They love
central planning agencies that intimidate. They love the fact that this is an all-powerful agency with tentacles reaching into every nook and cranny of the country from Washington. That's exactly what they like, exactly what they want. And besides, and I think this is probably true of some Republicans too, you go out there and you, in the budget, say you're going to spend $1.9 trillion. You better have some agency that can collect it. Rush Limbaugh, mornings at 11 on AM 1500 KSTP.
Okay, the whip's not even working now. I'm concerned.
This is kind of music for the Jets after they've been barbed up. I mean, this is the barbiturate version of cool. You can see him slumped in the corner, you know, in some reefer crash pad there. Hi, James Lilac's back here at the diner. Wide awake, I promise. Wide, staring awake. Derek from Minneapolis, how you doing?
Doing good yourself, James?
I'm hitting my 15th wind, so yeah. I'm feeling better.
Just real quick, I know you're a big Elvis Costello fan.
Yes, I am.
So you obviously like the singer-songwriters. Have you heard anything of the new Bob Dylan album yet?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not a big Bob Dylan fan.
Oh, that surprised me. I thought Elvis Costello, you know, would just naturally work, you know, towards being a Bob Dylan fan.
I think actually, even though I admire him for what he does and I understand why people like him, I have this sort of inbred natural reaction against things born and of the 60s.
I'm only 32. Yeah. So for years, I just dissed him, you know, just ignored him. You know, now in the last couple of years, I realized how important he was. But like you said, I'm kind of like Mr. Anti too. I hated the whole concept of these Woodstock anniversaries and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what I think it was this. Was I didn't hear very much Dylan when I was in high school, and when I came to the University of Minnesota and worked at the Valley on the jukebox down in the pub, they had a few tunes that were played to death. One of them was Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry. The other, then there were about four Bob Dylan tunes, but down there, and if I heard like a Rolling Stone one or like a, you know, she loved, yeah, like a little girl, if I heard, I mean,
or
they,
Rainy Day Woman, whatever, Let's Get Stoned.
I just live
and never hear that again.
Oh, I got really, and the sound of his voice and his instrumentation and all that stuff just gave me the hives. So it's one of those judgment things. I'm not making a call against the guy and his music, because you're right, he's very important, interesting lyricist and all that stuff. Nice that he could do what he did with his voice. The harmonica sounds like somebody's shaving cats without anesthesia, but if it comes to singer-songwriters who can't really sing and are good wordsmiths, I'll take Elvis.
In terms of voice, you cannot top Elvis Costello.
I know, God love him.
A friend of mine let me a videotape. It shows an early thing of him on the BBC doing Allison with just an electric guitar. I want to say unplugged, but doing Allison.
Mm-hmm.
His voice is so wonderful, and he just hits the chorus of that song.
Yeah, for a classical sounding singing voice, he really grew into it.
Yeah.
But if you go back and listen to, for example, on Get Happy, the tune "I Can't Stand Up for Falling,"
one of the greatest damn songs.
Well, I know, but the end of it, he just loses where he is on the scale. Just "I can't stand." He just completely blurts it out. He hits the range of his song, of his vocal abilities, right there, captured for posterity.
Have you seen him live, James?
Many times.
Does the voice? I sound like a Philistine, but how is he live? Does the voice translate?
Oh, he's great. He was just great. I saw him when he first came to town. Then I saw him at the State. Then I saw him at the
big outdoor concert with Blondie.
that one I didn't see. I saw him about three or four times, and every time I was close. Every time I saw the veins standing out in his head. That's when I too was young, geeky, caffeinated, angry, and dateless, as I presumed Elvis to be.
Yeah,
of course, what I didn't know was that he was getting drunk every night with BB Buell and other Playboy models. But no,
that fine line between geeksters and hipsters. So
exactly,
Elvis always walked it.
That's the man.
Well, listen, I'll let you get a double Earl of Grey and hit the road.
All right, thanks, Derek.
Take it easy.
Bye bye. You know, before we go, I want to read this here. This is a punchline. A punchline from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. It's David Grimes, one of my arch enemies, because he's just not funny. He's just not funny. It's about Columbus Day. Highlights from the story of Christopher Columbus is told to Florida columnist David Grimes by his 11-year-old son. Some say Columbus discovered the world is round, but that's not true. The world was round long before he was born. They also say he discovered America, but that isn't true either. In fact, I wonder how he managed to discover his shoes each morning. He always seemed to think he was in one place, when actually he was as far from that place as he could possibly be. This is humor. This is what David Grimes thinks is humor. You know what I may have discovered here? I've been reading David Grimes for a long time. He may actually be worse than Mark Russell. We may have to no longer have Mark Russell as the gold standard. You know, if Mark were here, if Mark Russell was here, I'd tell Mark Russell that he's no longer the worst comedian on earth.
The deficit rank. Ah! The deficit rank. Those budget gaps can be a 12-digit drag. I'm telling you, that's
stop
it. Deficit. They really made a mess of it. That's the deficit rank. Thank you.
I think you got him.
He's still running.
I know he is. Mark Russell was sitting in the back booth all night long waiting for me to mention his name so he could pop.
Or
doesn't he have anything better to do?
He cloaked that bow tie nicely.
Doesn't he have a multicolored piano he could be banging bad tunes around? I take it back. I take it back. David Grimes is not the worst humorist in American newspapers. Bill Timaeus is not the worst humorist in American newspapers. Nope. That honor goes to a winner and still champion, Mark Russell. If he ever shows his face, he's going to have to come in a disguise next time. Because, I mean, I saw the guy in the tux, I saw the shiny hair, the whole bit.
Never even dawned on me. And he was here before you were.
And that's what makes me...
Lying in ambush. Bedwetter.
Frightened me to think he'll be here after I am, too. Probably has a 40-year career contract with PBS. I'll be on PBS tomorrow, folks. That's right, sucking up public money for my own entertainment and edification and yours, if you like, too. Channel 2 at 7 o'clock. I'll be on for about 90 seconds. Blink, and you miss it. What I'm going to say, I have no idea, because now I have to go home to the house of many people, and I have to write what I'm going to do tomorrow. And then maybe I can sleep. Maybe in some far distant day, I can put the head in the pillow, and slumber will come. Morpheus will just anoint my brow, and into Lethe I will sink. Maybe not. Art's coming up next. I won't be here tomorrow night, folks, but we'll see you on Monday. This is James Lilax here, as ever, at the diner on KSDP AM 1500, St. Paul, Minneapolis. Midnight.
From ABC News, I'm Bob Hart. $16 a month, not a lot, but that's the average cost of living increase retired Americans will find in their Social Security checks next year. These retirees in Miami are more resigned to that than pleased.
They don't give us enough the way it is. Whatever we can get, we're satisfied.
Whatever they can afford, they give. And I'm very...